Since that day, she has used her knowledge of engineering mechanics to prove that the collapse of the World Trade Center Twin Towers and other buildings within the World Trade Center complex could not have happened as the American public was told. She believes, in fact, that what brought down the World Trade Center towers and other buildings on 9/11 was a directed energy weapon developed within the Star Wars program. A great pleasure to welcome to the Richard Serrett Show and Glastonbury Radio, Dr. Judy Wood. How are you?
Wonderful.
What I hear time and time again is it's about time people are starting to pay attention to Dr. Judy Wood. Are you finding that you're more in demand these days in terms of interviews, whether it's print, radio, or television?
Yes, and the types of criticisms that I think are kind of idiotic seem to be going away.
And those early criticisms, what could you characterize them? What would a typical, how would a typical interview go in which perhaps they were trying to discredit or railroad you?
No, and actually, folks wouldn't want to interview me, because I answer questions and they don't want the answers. for example, my favorite one is aluminum glows.
Aluminum glows?
Yeah, there's a big issue of that Judy was ridiculous because she thinks that aluminum glows when it doesn't. But this is a scientific fact. Why are we arguing about this?
All right.
You know, things like that are just, but those types of things seem to have just gone away. I call it noise.
Right. And why do you think people are actually starting now to listen to the message and pay attention to what you're saying?
I'm not sure why. Perhaps they've realized that the other options aren't making sense.
The other options being controlled demolition or the official version that two airliners flew into buildings 1 and 2 and they came a-tumbling down.
Right. Or thermite or thermate or spray-on thermite, whatever it is, or bombs in the building.
Would you say that you're getting more, or previously you were getting more heat from those who were peddling the official conspiracy theory that is Bin Laden orchestrated this from a cave in Afghanistan with a satellite phone, or from inside the 9/11 truth movement, those who seem, for some reason that's unexplicable to me, mesmerized and beholden to the controlled demolition theory?
Definitely the latter category. The ones who have heard the official story, when they hear what I have to say, they're right on top of it all ears.
Interesting.
It's the official alternative story, folks, that are the issue.
Well, there's only really within the 9/11 truth movement, and I use that term advisedly because it's like when people refer to the black community or the Muslim community. There isn't really a community. There are just, I mean, there are people who belong to organizations and they have T-shirts and wave placards, but I think all of us that are interested in finding the truth wherever that may lead, even if it leads back to a cave in Afghanistan, could call themselves 9/11 truthers. But there only seems to be within the 9/11 truth camp this theory of controlled demolition aside from yours.
It's like a faith-based movement.
Yes.
It's a belief system rather than looking at the facts. And once you start looking at the facts, it becomes quite obvious. Bombs blow things up. The chunks go flying, and they stay as chunks until they land. And then you have big chunks, little chunks, and between-sized chunks. Here we saw a building turning into powder in midair before it hit the ground.
It was made to disappear, I think, is the term you used.
Yeah, or it disappeared. It went poof.
Yeah.
It went away.
Dr. Judy Wood is my guest here on the Richard Serrett Show, Glastonbury Radio. Let me crib something from your bio page on your website. And that is drjudywood.com, drjudy, J-U-D-Y, wood.com. We stand today at the dawn of an entirely new age. Man has in his hands a method of disrupting the molecular basis for matter and the ability to split the earth in half on a moment's notice. It gives the term scorched earth policy a new significance. The technology that was demonstrated on 9/11 can split the earth in half, or it can be used to allow all people to live happily ever after with free energy. However, he who controls the energy controls the people. Control of energy leads to destruction of the planet. But we have a choice, and this choice is real. Live happily ever after or destroy the planet. This is why I have been studying the evidence of what happened on 9/11. This evidence is central to it all. 9/11 was a demonstration of a new technology, free energy. It can be used for good, but we need to make the choice and help others too as well. Dr. Judy Wood, when you say a new technology, how new is this technology?
Well, I've not looked into the history of it, but how I came to realize what it was is just by looking at the evidence. And I'm an experimentalist in engineering mechanics, and I'm used to looking at evidence. And if you look at it long enough, it tells you exactly what happened. But the story I was getting from the evidence was that something I had not seen before had to have happened. And I started putting the pieces together and being able to figure out what it had to be and defining it. And it turns out it's not totally new. I've seen there's points in history where the technology that uses the same principles, the same type of physics, has been around. Nikola Tesla has used it, and then recently John Hutchison, who does demonstrations using this technology.
Yes, we've had John on the program a number of times, and we're talking about some sort of anti-gravitic capability. He's posted videos on his website of levitating heavy objects within this field. So you mentioned Tesla, of course. Now Tesla was theorizing about this, I'm guessing, probably close to 100 years ago. So
exactly.
It's certainly not new, but let's talk, first of all, what exactly you think we're talking about here. You mentioned on the website a Star Wars directed energy weapon.
Well, I was hypothesizing it came from the Star Wars program, because they were doing something with all these budgets for years, developing something, some kind of energy weapon to shoot down, missiles or whatnot. And something had to have been developed in that program. And
yes,
programs like it in other countries.
Yes, that $3.4 trillion that's been that has disappeared off the Defense Department's books had to go somewhere, and why not into something like this? Now, explain whether we're talking about Tesla's scalar technology or this DO. Is that the common nomenclature for DO?
I use it for, I've defined it because I don't know the name of it. It's a new technology. It's not like a model, 32A or whatever. It's something that involves energy. The energy is directed, and it's used as a weapon. Directed energy weapon.
Hmm.
So it's in the general category of that. But also the opposition tries to, quote, debunk what I'm saying, turning it into laser pointers or something along that line. No, there's plenty of other wavelengths and types of energy interference. My background is in optics, optical interference, interferometry, which is how I was able to see that it's a type of interference that's being caused, that's causing this damage. Why you get damage one place and not another adjacent to it. If you have something that's heating something, you have something that's hot, something that's warm, and something that's cold, it's a gradient. But if you have a very directed energy that interferes in a particular place, it causes the effect in a particular place.
Dr. Judy Wood is here talking about how a Star Wars directed energy type weapon may have been used to bring down the World Trade Center towers. Are we also talking about the North and South Tower and Building 7, or just the Twin Towers?
I'm talking about seven or eight buildings.
Seven or eight buildings.
Yes, building 1, 2, 3, 4, everything with a WTC prefix.
Right. Yes, most people think it was just a north-south tower in Building 7, but there were, what, 9 buildings in total?
There are 7 buildings in the complex, and then there's a couple other buildings that were infected, or at least affected, but they were also infected.
Infected? Interesting.
Infected.
How do you mean infected?
You fix it, and the problem still continues, so you have to take the building apart. That's Banker's Trust. Banker's Trust was directly across the street from Tower 2. And a couple of years after 9/11, they finished, well, right away they were trying to repair it, replace that gash in the front,
yes,
and beams. And a couple of years later, they decided they couldn't repair it, and they had to take it apart.
Because
after they had finished fixing it.
You mean once you turn this weapon on, it continues to have an impact even once the weapon is turned off?
When I first started looking into John Hutchison's material and people who'd written about it, I saw a paragraph in an article that grabbed my attention big time. It said if the mass is too great, the process may not be self-quenching.
Well, I'm not an engineer, and that's getting in...
It doesn't burn out and stop itself. It might just keep going.
Ah, okay, it almost sounds like gray goo from this dreaded gray goo that they talk about as a byproduct of nanotechnology.
Ah.
Now,
you start monkeying with things and you don't know what you're doing. Something could blow up, or whoops, there goes the planet.
Now, you talk about how you started to question the events of 9/11 on that same day, when you saw and heard on television things that were contradictory and appeared to, quote, violate the laws of physics. Can you give me some examples? You've mentioned some briefly, but give us some more concrete examples of things that you saw on 9/11 that violated the laws of physics.
Well, when I look at a TV set, you know, I see the image. And you know, if what I'm hearing doesn't match, I just tune out what I'm hearing. What I saw was a building that looked like a sweater unraveling. And I'm saying, they're telling us that this thing, you know, had this progressive collapse or pancaking collapse. And I look away and I'm thinking, now, how would I imagine a building behaving if it was going to come apart? I look back at the TV set and said, nope, it doesn't look like that. And made some calculations about pancaking if you went floor to floor to floor, or even just a free fall. And it didn't make sense. How can you get a building to go away at approximately the same time it would take to free fall a bowling ball off the roof down to the pavement in a vacuum?
Okay.
And you had an intact building. The bottom, you know, two-thirds of the building was intact. And you only have the damage zone up above. So how can that cause the lower part of the building to be weakened? And once the top part goes away and it's turned into powder, the bottom part of the building isn't loaded anymore. It has no more stress on it. So if you take a brick off of something, off the scales read zero or whatever. So why is the bottom of the building going to fail?
All right. Dr. Judy Wood, my guest here on the Richard Serrett Show, Glastonbury Radio. Talk to me a little bit about the... I think you call it the dustification of the WTC buildings. What is dustification?
It's a new word. For a new process, it deserves a new word.
All right.
The building turned to dust. It was dustified.
How much of the building turned to dust?
The majority of it. I don't know exactly how much, but you look at what's left, and the rescue workers walked horizontally or rappelled down into empty caverns. You could look from east to west, right through the complex, at street level, at ground level. You know, you had 102 110-story buildings there, and they're gone. There's a few outer walls here and there, and then some, you know, a few beams strewn around and, you know, crinkled up stuff, but not 110 stories worth.
How do we, I mean, we saw images on television, and I mean, the entire crime scene was hauled away to a scrapyard, I don't know where it was, Brooklyn or someplace.
Staten Island?
Staten Island, and then eventually shipped off, I think, somewhere else, which was is a crime in itself to disturb a crime scene. But
we're told it was shipped to China.
Ah, China. But how?
Or, Asia.
Okay, but when you say that the majority of the building was literally turned to dust, I mean, how do we? As you're a scientist, how do you qualify and ultimately prove something like that when you say that the majority of the building was turned to dust? It's difficult.
Well, you get a whole lot of dust, and if you think of the volume of dust you should have, and then look at how much dust, you know, you have a couple inches deep in the streets around. And you know, through a satellite map, you could approximate what area coverage, and you can account for a lot of dust that way.
Okay.
I think a lot of people realize there's a whole lot of dust. Now, a regular controlled demolition, the Seattle King Dome, when they blew that up intentionally,
yes,
the newspaper read, it choked downtown with dust for almost 20 minutes. Like, that was a long time.
Sure.
And then dust was gone. It settled out.
Right.
Not weeks and months.
And that dust is responsible for the lingering deaths of hundreds and hundreds of rescue workers and search teams, etc. At the site to this very day, I'm guessing. It is the dust that's responsible, correct?
Yes, I believe so, because if you look at what the dust is doing, I have this picture that was taken about 15 to 20 minutes after the North Tower went away, and the dust has settled out. You have a blue sky, you can see. So the dust has settled down to the ground. And then you start noticing around the feet of the police officers and firefighters, they call them fuzzballs, just fuzzy areas where this fine dust is being kicked up. And then about a half hour later, the photographs show the dust, that fine dust coming up all by itself, without even being kicked up. So how can you have that fine of dust settle completely out of the air in 15 minutes, but then later it starts wafting up on its own? I believe that is evidence that coarse dust landed and then became fine dust, because it was continuing to break down. And various firefighters complained about how hot it was on their arm. The dust landed on their arms, so they had to wash their arm off. If it was hot dust that landed on their arm, it's been cooled off by now. It doesn't have but so much heat capacity, you know, little fine pieces of dust, a whole lot of surface area. So what is it doing burning their arms?
All right, Dr. Wood, stay put. We'll take a timeout, come back, and pick up on the other side. The Richard Serrett Show, in conversation with Dr. Judy Wood and her controversial theory that it was a Star Wars directed energy weapon that brought down the World Trade Center buildings. Back with more. Stay with us on Glastonbury Radio.
Glastonbury Radio reaches a truly global audience of interactive listeners surfing the World Wide Web whilst listening to our programs. Because of the global nature of online digital radio, we're seeking those forward-thinking people who run online businesses to come and take advantage of our low advertising rates.
Graham, you can contact me through glastonburyradio.net at richard.serrett@glastonburyradio.fm. That's GlastonburyRadio.net, the website, and again, my email address, richard.serrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T, at GlastonburyRadio.fm. You can also reach me through my website, which is www.richardserrett.com, and the email address there is richard@richardserrett.com. Please take some time and drop me a line. I would love to know what you think of the program. Coming up a little bit later, of course, the Lab Gal, Dr. Patricia Doyle, will be here to talk about cattle mutilations. Dr. Judy Wood is with us. Her website, again, is www.drjudywood.com. Let's talk a bit about some of the anomalies at the World Trade Center complex, and we mentioned dustification. Let's talk about something you call lift and disruption.
And that brings us to the toasted cars. Toasted I use as a generic term. It's toast. It's history. Something happened to these cars. It looks like they could have been burned, but, you know, paper next to them didn't burn. The ones that are really in bad shape are usually upright, and the ones, there's ones that are parked upside down with wheels in the air, and they don't look toasted. They just look upside down. And I started noticing this pattern. It was pretty bizarre. It's like either the car's been flipped upside down, or it got, you know, cooked or toasted or something happened to it.
Why would you have those two seemingly contradictory phenomena occurring, where some cars are toasted to cinders, and others are simply turned over onto their roof? I mean, are we talking about with the cars turning over? Is this the Hutchison effect that you're talking about?
Yes, lift or disruption.
Okay, so why the two occurring at the same time? You would think it'd be one or the other, would it not?
Well, I can think of it physically. If something is, for whatever reason, unable to come off the ground, think of it affecting all the parts within it. You know, and maybe it has something to do with the grounding as well.
So if a car was, in fact, lifted up off the ground and turned over when landing on its roof, I mean, were people sending you pictures of this? I mean, how often was this occurring around the World Trade Center complex? Give me a sense of the location of some of these cars, and also the scope of this. How often was it happening?
Well, the official number is 1,400 cars that had to be carried off from southern Manhattan. But I have photographs that I think if I, you know, go through the photographs, I could find at least 1,400 cars I have photographs of. I have lots more photographs than that. I know, like, particular cars, I recognize them. It happened over as far as FDR Drive.
And how far away is that from the World Trade Center towers?
Maybe a half mile.
And again, these...
It's on the other side of Manhattan.
The other side of Manhattan. And again, these cars were either burnt to a cinder, or they were turned over onto their roof.
I didn't see any flipped ones there.
No.
But I saw a lot of toasted ones. And they're toasted in really bizarre ways. Like, there's the one that, this is where I really, you know, when the light bulb went on about it had to be an energy-type field interfering, which when I saw this circular pattern that was not cooked-looking, but right around it, almost like they took masking tape and cooked, you know, around it, but not that circular spot.
Now, Dr. Wood, these are all bizarre phenomena, but why do they necessarily point to some sort of directed energy weapon? How are these things signatures of such a weapon?
In order to get, you know, one part of the car toasted, another car, you can still see the brand new wax job, in an abrupt line, requires an interference of some type of energy, an energy field.
Okay.
And, how do you get out a blowtorch and cook something and have an abrupt line where that cooking stops?
No, it should be...
And also not burn the paper that's right next to it.
Yeah, it should be indiscriminate, one would think, if it was simply a fireball streaming out from a building that's just been set afire by, kerosene or something. Now, let's talk about some of the other phenomenon.
The holes.
The holes, yes.
The sky view of the site reveals circular holes, cylindrical cutouts like a post hole digger. Just removed material, and it's just the material's gone. The best one is Building 6, just north of the North Tower. It has so many of these cylindrical cutouts that they sort of coalesce into one big hole, where it looks like about 50% of the building's mass is missing.
And these photos were I'm looking at them now. When were they taken?
The big aerial photo was taken on the 23rd of September.
And
taken on the 17th.
Okay, and the removal of the material after the events of 9/11 wouldn't account for any of that?
Not a cylindrical cutout. And there's even a cylindrical cutout in the street, down Liberty Street, just between Bankers Trust and the South Tower. This big round hole in the street. You could drop a whole pickup truck, you know, right down that hole and never be seen again.
And again, what are these cylindrical cutouts or these vertical holes? Why are they significant? What do they tell you as an engineer?
That's that's when I decided that DALSA had to be very directed, because how do you get a vertical cylindrical cutout by random chance, and another one, and another one? It's just, you start counting them, and you can count up 50 of these patterns. And they're pretty much the same diameter. But gauging on the spacing of the columns, using that for a measurement tool, it's about 24 feet in diameter. There is a larger one in Building 5, but most of them are about 24 feet in diameter.
Dr. Judy Wood is with us here on the Richard Serra Show, Glastonbury Radio. And her website again, drjudywood.com, was a Star Wars directed energy weapon used to bring down the World Trade Center towers.
How about a weapon developed in the Star Wars program?
Fair enough. I'm using the verbiage from the website, but a weapon developed during the Star Wars program. Have other scientists come out, maybe even some that worked during the Star Wars program, and said, Dr. Judy Wood, you may be closer to the truth than you know? I mean, are you getting verification or corroboration from elsewhere?
Yes, I'm getting from elsewhere. I don't like to speak for other people, but I don't believe it's from anyone who has a top secret security clearance, because they can't talk about it. So that's why it needs to be someone outside of the system.
What would a weapon like this actually look like?
I have no idea.
Would it be large, small? Would it be mobile? Would it be stationary?
I don't think it's necessary to define what the weapon looks like, but what the physics actually does.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about what the physics actually does, and keeping in mind you're talking to someone who probably at best has a grade 9 physics understanding.
Well, if you think of John Hutchison's work, he interferes various type of energy fields. He doesn't know quite where they're going to interfere and where the action's going to happen within some region. I believe the first time something flew up, it was a sponge, and it just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it went flying up and hit the ceiling.
So the movie...
That was in 1983.
Right. I've seen the video. It's quite remarkable.
And I started looking at... Well, I was looking at the dust plume coming up, or whatever it was. The fumes, I call it generically, because I don't know what it is, this whitish stuff that wafts high up in the upper atmosphere. And so I thought I'd get some better images of it by looking at weather satellite pictures on that day. And I discovered, lo and behold, is this huge hurricane right outside of New York City on 9/11.
Yeah, that is unheard of, that a hurricane would be that far north.
And that it went there from Bermuda as a straight line for 4 days, got right up to New York, stopped, made a U-turn almost, and then went directly east, and then went up into Canada.
Any idea what level hurricane that was?
It was a Category 3 as it was going past Bermuda, or the day before. But like a figure skater puts their arms out to slow down, the hurricane, when it stopped, spread out and slowed down, I think, Category 1, but it covered a much larger area. So the way they only rate them by speed, not speed and area coverage. There is also some cold fronts moving from west to east that served as a wall there. But it was just so amazing that everything lined up so perfectly. And I think we all know of someone who complains of there are problems with arthritis and so forth when a storm is approaching.
Yes.
And they can feel it. They're feeling the field effects. There are changes in the electrical field and other things going on right around the storm. The storm doesn't need to be on top of something. It's in front of the storm or out to the side. And there's evidence of field effects around New York City on 9/11. The three biggest airports surrounding Manhattan, we have Newark Airport, JFK, and LaGuardia, all reported thunder on 9/11, dry thunder.
Dry thunder. And again, let's talk about the hurricane for a moment, because this is remarkable. Here we have a level 3 hurricane, or a Category 3 hurricane, heading for Manhattan Island. Now, if a 3, or I would think even a 2, were to come ashore on Manhattan Island, that would have, given the population density, etc., that would have catastrophic consequences.
Oh, it doesn't even need to come ashore. It just needs to park outside New York City for more than X number of hours, and you have storm surges.
Fair enough.
JFK Airport is right at sea level. You would flood that. And Manhattan, you'd flood that too.
But jog my memory, Dr. Wood. I don't recall hearing anything about, leading up to 9/11, any concern about a hurricane heading that way, or any reports of a hurricane from CNN or the Weather Channel or anything of the sort.
You're not alone. I've got images, screenshots of the morning weather report forecast, like on NBC, and I've got the other station, like Good Morning America. I don't know if it's that show, but one like it, where they have the nationwide weather map, and they show that patch of the ocean, but they don't show the big pinwheel out there.
And how did you get a hold of that satellite photo?
Somebody posted it, and another source complaining that they had the weather forecast wrong for Bush's trip down to Florida. And they didn't notice anything about a hurricane. But they're talking about the weather forecast for Bush's trip to Florida had predicted rain. They said it was sunny, or I don't remember exact details, but that they're concerned with that area.
Any way of confirming the legitimacy of that satellite photo? And have you taken it to a meteorologist or
the satellite image of the hurricane?
Yes. Can you fake something like that?
Oh, of the hurricane? No, that's all over the... I thought you were talking about the TV screenshot.
Sorry,
but,
no.
But the hurricane images, they're... I got those from the National Weather... NOAA.
Okay.
They're on the NOAA site, and it's named Hurricane Aaron, and the path is not a secret.
Ah, they had a name for it. The path is not a secret. Interesting, yet nobody was talking about it. Now, let's link that back to the directed energy weapon that you say brought down the 7 buildings inside the World Trade Center complex and 2 more outside. How are they related?
Well, I know that, you know, with John's work, John Hutchison's work, he interferes different kinds of energy fields. And this could be one of the energy fields, or it also could be just like a controlled environment, where it's a very controlled, consistent environment. No, weird pressure changes or anything in there. Because I did plot out the data from the National NOAA, and it shows for 24 hours surrounding 9/11, for X number of hours after and X number of hours before, the hurricane stayed at the same exact speed, same exact pressure. It's in the same location. Plus or minus a few millimeters here or there. But it was very constant. So it seemed like there was a very controlled environment at a minimum.
Controlled environment meaning an artificially created hurricane?
Not necessarily, but you can create the hurricane, or the hurricane can be there, but seems like it's too much of a coincidence. It was just an ideal location. There's a whole lot of coincidences that go with this. I'm not speculating that they made the hurricane, but I have questions as to why they were so confident it wasn't going to be a problem, that it didn't alert people to evacuate. That to me implies that they know 100% certainty that they're going to be able to make that hurricane leave town.
Right.
That if it stayed, 4 more hours, would we have had flooding in southern Manhattan from the storm surges? I don't know those answers. But most places worry about those things.
Yes, most places would worry about those things. The satellite images that are on your website, drjudywood.com, under the heading 9/11 Weather Anomalies and Field Effects, are those the actual, those thumbnails that I'm looking at, are they the actual satellite photos?
Yes, they're miniature versions. If you click on the photos, you get larger ones.
Yeah, I mean, that's an impressive, again, not a meteorologist, but that's an impressive looking storm, to say the least. I mean, that's scary looking.
And it's got a pretty interesting inside to it as well.
Well, yes, that leads me to my next question, because I have talked to a number of people about the military's capability of controlling the weather, and of course, the military commissioned a paper on just that, controlling the weather by 2025. It would appear that they are well ahead of schedule. In fact, I talked to a meteorologist formerly from Pocatello, Idaho, who was a TV weatherman, who quit because he realized that the weather was being controlled, not just big storms, but everything, as he said. And he was, when he came to that realization after some research, he quit. He couldn't in all good conscience go on TV and talk about the weather as if it were just happenstance. And he did talk about how, again, scalar technology could be used to either heat up or cool the top of a thunderstorm, for example, and create very volatile, immense storms. And he talked about a certain signature, and that was some sort of geometric shape in the eye of the hurricane. Is that what we're looking at here? A sort of a, what is that? It's kind of a hexagon.
It looks like a pentagon.
A pentagon, yes.
With a bunch of worms in it, like a maze made out of shrubbery.
Yes, I'm looking at that right now. And you've taken this to meteorologists. Do they? I'm assuming. What do they say?
It's well understood. The meteorologists with NOAA, you know, have it on their site, and they even brought up the strange looking eye, but they didn't know what to do with it. And I'm not so much into that. It's just, you know, you expect to see a swirly pattern in the middle.
Yes.
Not something this organized. And it seems pretty bizarre to have something like that turning around in the middle and have it still so crisp and clean.
Indeed, indeed. All right, listen, another time out. When we come back, let's talk about some of the other anomalies at the World Trade Center compound that might, again, point to some sort of directed energy weapon. Dr. Judy Wood here on The Richard Serrett Show, Glastonbury Radio. Don't go away.
Engineering mechanics, which is like applied physics.
Applied physics, all right. And a former professor, if I may be so bold, the former professor part, the former, did that have anything to do with your controversial theories about what happened on 9/11?
Well, I don't like to dwell on those kinds of things.
All right.
Leave them.
Well, let me ask you in another way, and that is, is it difficult to be talking about the things that you're talking about? That is, again, that a directed energy weapon may have been responsible for bringing down the World Trade Center buildings on 9/11. Is it difficult to talk about and still maintain a career in your field? Because you're obviously, you have other things that you're doing besides this theory.
Oh, yes, very much, because you have, various funding sources from the government, from defense industry. And, you know, if it's secrets they don't want exposed, you better not go there. It's you're walking on, you know, thin ice. I don't know who did 9/11, and I don't like to go there. It could have, you know, but I'd like to state it that, you know, I don't know if it's this country, another country, organization, an individual, a group of individuals. You know, who knows? I just know about physical science.
Right, right. You call it free energy, and you know, we have this capability now, you've discovered, to either split the earth in half like an atom, or provide for all people free energy, essentially. Why are you convinced that we are talking about a free energy here?
If you look at what happened, think about the energy that changed shape or that changed modes, so to speak.
Yes.
You had a building there. You no longer have a building. In the old world of physics that we were taught in school, how much energy would it take to turn that building into powder?
You tell me.
It's too much to calculate. It can't be, you know, would it can't be heat, because heat melts things into a glob. It doesn't powderize it.
Right. That's interesting. I never thought of that. If it was simply a kerosene, why so much dust? Why not just a lot of molten steel?
Yeah, the building would wilt.
Right, right.
As I did this in my class. I gave a pop quiz where you can tell how far down they are when they start giggling. I get a bunch of coat hangers, wad them up, you know, the old-fashioned metal ones.
Yes.
You want to heat up this pot of water, so you get a campfire going, put the wad of coat hangers over the campfire as a grill, put the pot on, and then light the fire. Okay, what's going to happen? Multiple choice. Nothing. Or the pot slowly starts easing down towards, you know, when it heats up. Or it's going to suddenly, without notice, shatter into little sticks that go flying. Or suddenly, all of the metal coat hangers turn to powder and the pot slams to the ground. You could keep thinking of options. But if you start thinking about what you would expect to happen with a bunch of metal, wadded up metal coat hangers with a heavy pot of water on them, they're gonna soften and sag.
Right.
They're not gonna shatter. We saw a building that shattered into powder.
What about the reports of explosions in the, which appeared to be coming from the sub level of the World Trade Center towers? Lots of reports of that. Would that report corroborate what you're talking about?
Yeah, have you seen some of John samples with just holes in them, or you know, the metal that's sprayed open?
Right.
And also, there's metal that turns to jelly while it's being affected. Imagine what will happen to air tanks and pressurized tanks within the building.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
There are many reports of firefighters who had Scott packs, you know, the oxygen packs that the firefighters wear on their backs.
Yes.
That were, you know, extra packs and that were in the fire trucks that were exploding.
Hmm.
So their air tanks were just, you know, blowing up, and it blew up the fire truck.
You alluded to, again, the Hutchison effect, and that brings us to another anomaly, and that is jelly beams. Jelly beams, B-E-A-M-S, not beans, as in Ronald
right.
Reagan's jelly beans. Tell me a little bit about the jellification of metal around the World Trade Center complex.
There's a famous picture that a lot of folks have seen that they can't really explain, where a big, huge core column is bent like a horseshoe with no cracks in it. A mechanical stress cannot do that. But we see the exact same pictures in John Hutchison's work with a 3-inch diameter copper solid bar or aluminum or molybdenum that just curls without any grip marks, without any cooking, without any crinkling up of the material. It's pretty striking. I don't know how you would reproduce that mechanically, or with a torch, even.
Dr. Judy Wood is with us. The website, drjudywood.com, and we're talking about her theory that some sort of directed energy weapon, perhaps from the Star Wars program, was in fact used to bring down the World Trade Center towers, whether we're talking about scalar technology. The other night, last week in fact, I was talking about your upcoming appearance on the show and with another gentleman, and we talked about that scene from the Ghostbusters when the character played by Dan Aykroyd warns another of the Ghostbusters not to cross the beams. And, of course, if they went and crossed the beams. Is that essentially what we're talking about, the crossing of the beams?
Yes. Different magnitudes of different types of energy, different relative strengths. You know, there's a lot of different recipes I'm sure you could come up with that would have different effects on different materials.
You mentioned another anomaly, and that is cold fusion. Was there an example of cold fusion on 9/11?
I don't know the particulars with that, but that's another. There's the type that Pons and Fleischmann did.
Yes.
An electrochemical process. It could be involved, you know, remotely by producing some kind of an energy effect. But I'm not so familiar with their work.
If,
but I like to just keep it in the general category of the physics of it, which is that this physics is something that we haven't seen before. That could be a product
right.
of this physics. But one of the other really strange things is round holes in the windows.
Round holes in the windows.
Or circular or oval.
Okay. In which windows?
Buildings all around the complex.
You've seen photographs of these? Do you have actual physical evidence of this?
On my webpage, on the Cliff Notes page, there's a section on windows.
All right. Clicking on that right now here on drjudywood.com.
Section G.
Section G, okay. So while I'm scrolling down to find that, just tell me a little bit about what these holes in these windows, why they're significant.
If you have a pressure from air, it's going to stress the window and it'll break. And you'll get cracks going up in the corners and the middle broken out. If you have, it's pretty much intact window, but just an oval roundish kind of hole someplace, another round one someplace else, and maybe a broken out spot between them, it looks like something else is going on. And there's no stab wounds, I call them, no projectiles went through.
Right.
And there's...
Why are you so sure about that?
You can see from the inside. There's no big things that go through.
Okay.
But also, there's some double pane windows, for energy efficiency, where the outside window is affected, but the inside window is still intact. So if it was a projectile, how come it stopped before it went through the second window?
Okay. Now I'm looking at, you're calling these melted window holes?
There's some that look like a soldering iron, got in there and moved around.
Right. That's the Millennium Hotel windows I'm looking at.
And notice the whitish stuff around it.
Right. Yes. Okay. What is that?
Is that the outgrowth of what I call fuming? There were some fumes coming out of there, and I think that's the molecular dissociation that's associated with this effect.
Okay. I'm also looking at the Century 21 building, and again, I'm looking at some interesting holes. I mean, some of those aren't round holes. They just look like...
It started as a round hole in the middle and then broke outward from there.
Okay, and then the round holes looking out of the Century 21 building over the remains of WTC 4 and 5 with...
Yeah, that particular one, click on it and get an enlarged picture of it.
Okay, because I got to be honest, Dr. Wood, those look like just... I mean, I'm not a physicist or an engineer. They just look like... I'd walk right by that and say, yeah, that looks like broken glass. Oh, hey, now I've enlarged it. That is interesting.
Round holes.
Round holes.
See, on the far left, you got one right on the edge of the window pane.
Yes, I see the small round hole in the edge of the window pane. Oh, that is interesting.
And other ones, you can see that they started from the round holes and they, then they coalesced.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that
you
is...
You can see there's no big things that got launched through that window.
No, that is most peculiar. See, I'd walk right by that and say, yeah, that's just a bunch of broken windows. But upon further examination, any idea? I mean, you talk about the capability of this weapon, whatever this weapon is, this directed energy weapon. It would make the scorched earth policy look like a walk in the park. You mean what you say when you say that this could be used to split the earth like an atom?
How I came up with that is I was looking at the seismic levels for how many tons of TNT. And I got down to 12 on the Richter scale. That's enough to split the earth in half, which is equivalent to the same amount of energy received by the sun to the earth every day. That
My
struck
word.
Me.
How do you work up a calculation like that?
This is from a particular site, government site, explaining what the Richter scale was.
Okay.
And so I was just looking at, how many you know, tons of TNT are equivalent to 5 on the Richter scale or 6 or 7. And I got up to, you know, 12 is the biggest number, and that's enough energy to split the Earth in half.
And what was the Richter scale reading on that day?
The Richter scale reading was small, so this didn't have much to do with the Richter scale reading, but it got me thinking of, yeah, you have this, you know, these kinds of amounts of energy can be directed to do different things, and you don't want it to be splitting the Earth in half. You'd rather have it, causing birds to have food to eat and fly and, you know, all these other things that can be going on instead.
Right. This is going to sound
plants
like...
to grow and...
Whenever you talk about free energy, and this may sound like quite a departure, but I think there's some common ground with what you're talking about, and believe it or not, the UFO disclosure movement and people like Dr. Stephen Greer. Have you ever talked to Stephen Greer? I mean, and Stephen Bassett for that matter, because their whole movement is not so much about little green men. It's about the technology that we can that somebody has, whether they recovered it from a UFO crash site and back engineered it or what have you. But they're talking about the same sorts of things. They're talking about this limitless, this free energy, with both the capability to either destroy or preserve. Have you ever talked to Dr. Stephen Greer or?
No, I haven't.
Anyone in the UFO disclosure movement?
No.
They talk about things like zero point energy. I don't know if that's. A term.
I think it's all sort of. I think of it all kind of in the same type of thing. It's using energy in different ways. The example I like to give is a glass on your kitchen countertop.
Right.
If it's you got, you know, how much energy does it take to move it from point A to point B? Well, how you move it is the question. If it's a dry, rough surface, you take a lot of force to scooch it over. But if it's wet and you hydroplane it over, it just floats.
Right.
It just with like no energy, and so what the equivalent is I see with the World Trade Center is someone figured out how to use that other technique, how to use that other type of physics, and that other type of physics seems you could have unlimited energy in using it the same way, but using it for good things.
Right. Now that you've seen the effects of this directed energy weapon, do you now go back in history a short while ago, perhaps recent past, the war in Iraq or elsewhere, and start looking for signatures of this again? In other words, has this been used prior to 9/11 or after 9/11, as far as you're aware?
I actually was in Minneapolis 2 days after that bridge event in 2007.
Yes.
And I went there, you know, saying, okay, they dude it, as in directed energy weapons. But when I got there, it was no longer suspicion. It was, all doubt was removed.
Why?
Well, first of all, if you look at thinking about it, you have, like 12 different supports giving way at the exact same moment. So much the exact same moment that the cars rode on a horizontal road as it went down. And when it landed at the bottom, people got out of their cars. And you know, how do you have a bridge, you know, lose all of its supports the exact same moment in history? You know, that didn't make sense. But also, it had the fuming. It had the spontaneous combustion without burning paper. And when I was there in person, it's a weird smell to it.
Describe
it. Also heavily guarded, like it was a military operation.
Can you describe the smell?
The smell was, it was very mildewy kind of smell. And it could be they just had hosed the ground down so much that it was rotten by then. I don't know. But it was mildewy all over there. That's what I registered it as. It was a weird smell.
Did anyone around 9/11 or around the World Trade Center complex use the same sort of description in terms of the odor?
They used a different description, but they smelled, they called it an acrid smell.
Mm-hmm.
And that smell went on for months afterwards.
Hmm. Where do you go from here with this research, Dr. Judy Wood? First of all, let me ask you this. Has it been worth it?
My conscience left me no other choice.
All right, so where to from here?
People need to know about it if we're to have a planet. my mother had warned me about getting into this. She said, you'll lose your career. And I said, well, I'll lose my career if I don't, because nobody will have a career. We won't have a planet. And we as a society need to choose what we're going to do with this type of technology. And I think the more it is publicly available or known, the less likelihood that it's going to be used poorly. We need to have a different way of controlling people than locking them up as well, because if somebody wants to do it, you get it and turn on everybody else, you know, you got problems.
How do you get the message out? I mean, listen, I'm doing a show on an internet-only radio station. It's a fine one. It's one of the best, Glastonbury Radio. The website gets about 5 million hits a month, I am told. However, you know how people think. If it's not on the front page of the New York Times, it doesn't exist. So, how do you get the message out?
I'm all ears. People don't even realize that there's a QTAM case going on about this.
Tell me about that.
The contractors for the NIST report,
yes,
to determine what happened to Towers 1 and 2, they were given a mandate from Congress to determine how and why the WTC towers collapsed. And after it was all done with, NIST even admitted they did not investigate the collapse. And so that's fraud. And the contractors for that report collected money for not giving the answers that
sure,
they were paid for.
Sure.
And these contractors happened to be manufacturers of direct energy weapons.
That's interesting. Well, how do we know that? I mean, who are the contractors and
well, Applied Research Associates.
Right.
SAIC, Science Applications International.
Right.
And there's various other companies like Underwriters Lab. They even did fire tests to see if they could reproduce it. And they couldn't get they built up a full-scale floor model. They could not get it to fail to support load. Four tries. And then after a couple hours, they had to call the test. Yet they signed off on a report saying the fires did it.
These companies that you just mentioned, contracted to write the NIST report, you say that they are involved in the development of directed energy weapons. So does that mean that there is an actual patent out for one of these things? One of them has been, I mean, has anyone seen one of these things demonstrated?
The lower, you know, class of direct energy weapons is pretty well known. Like, you know, what do they call it?
Active denial?
Yeah.
The active denial weapon that was used in Iraq.
And, of course, we have laser pointers. We have, you know, TV remote control.
Okay, sure, sure.
Cell phones. So we know these things, these types of things exist. And we know if you look at the active denial system, you can think of what else they know how to do.
Interesting. You know, I would really encourage you to get a hold of someone like Stephen Bassett or Dr. Stephen Greer. In fact, Stephen Bassett is going to be on the program next week talking about, he has a new book out, but talking about the UFO disclosure movement, and he's certainly one of the top advocates in the world and has a lot of political clout. And again, it may seem a bit of a departure, but I think there's really a lot of common ground, especially with someone like Dr. Stephen Greer, whose main focus is on the free energy that he believes someone is sitting on, and that's the real reason behind this 60-year embargo on the truth regarding UFOs.
But he who controls the energy controls the people.
Exactly.
How do you control the people if you can't control the energy?
Exactly.
So there's a lot of motivation to keep it tucked away.
I think if the two of you were to sit down, you would find a lot of common ground, Dr. Stephen Greer and Stephen Bassett. In any event, I'll leave that up to you if you want to pursue that. But Dr. Judy Wood, I want to thank you for this this last hour. And I think I've said this to you before, and I mean it. You're a courageous woman. Anyone who puts the truth above a career is to be commended. And I hope that you continue to get the message out. And all I can say is Godspeed, I guess.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you for having me on and wanting to get the message out as well.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk again if you'll allow. And perhaps there are other people as well that we can get on the program that also want to talk about what you're talking about. I think it's that important that we continue to hammer away at this issue. As I say, I know for a lot of those in the 9/11 truth movement, it's very difficult to let go of the controlled demolition theory. But if we can move past that, then I think we'll be on the road to actually finding out what was really responsible and who ultimately is really responsible for 9/11. Dr. Judy Wood, again, thank you.
Thanks.
Dr. Judy Wood, a truly courageous woman. Coming up on the program next week, Stephen G. Bassett, one of the leaders in the UFO disclosure movement, will be here to talk about his new book. And we'll also talk about, obviously, UFOs and free energy and the pressure being brought to bear on governments around the world to release their UFO files. We have Dr. Patricia Doyle standing by. She'll join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about cattle mutilations and what they may be all about. She has a very different take on it. She'll share that with us, as I say, at the bottom of the hour. First, some news. A top constitutional scholar has said that recently released Justice Department memos prove that nefarious elements within the Bush administration were planning a massive military takeover of the country, and that the documents should be used to bring charges of treason.